Here we go once again. Fastest hour in hockey. The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. We are live on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, and Sportsnet Plus. Jake the Snake Schultz, Austin Mackey, Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. As always, this hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. Well, Sammy.
Yes.
Yeah. Right away to you. Whoa,
what did I do wrong?
Well, you predicted
picks wrong.
The Oilers in five.
Yeah, I was wrong.
You're done.
That's shocking. Shocking development here.
Like Survivor, you're off the show. You now have to leave.
Maybe you should have flipped those predictions.
What do you mean?
Panthers in five.
Dramatic.
Maybe you should have flipped them. I don't know.
In a few minutes, we'll welcome in Steve Aliquette, analyst for the New York Rangers, MSG, CEO of ClearSight Analytics. I'm sure he's got wonderful numbers to crunch for us and what they mean. Mm-hmm. And once again, Skinner either is great or he's given up a ton of goals. We'll get into that a little later. First, let me get your overall feel about not just the Oilers losing, but how they lost. Let's start with you, JB.
Well, I've got two thoughts on this. The first is that last year in the Stanley Cup Final, the Oilers took it to Florida twice like this, and Florida won the Stanley Cup. So I'm saying it's not a death sentence is the first point I'll make. Mm. The second point is this Florida team, you know, the way that we're all holding Connor McDavid in high regard and saying this is enjoy watching his prime. Mm. I think we need to enjoy watching the best playoff team of the past however many years, the decade at least. They are built.
But
for this,
I'll go further to you, okay? Like, I'm older than you.
Yeah.
I do remember the Montreal Canadiens in the 70s.
Yeah.
And then in the 80s, it was the Oilers and the Islanders. Yeah. Your dad's Islanders. Clark's Islanders.
Yep.
I'm not saying that I'm ready to compare this Florida team up against those, but I'd put them up with any other team that has won a Stanley Cup outside of the three I just mentioned.
Wow.
Okay.
Hawks?
Yes. Yes, Hawks. Yes, Pittsburgh. My Rangers in 94. Montreal. Like, go anywhere you want.
Yeah.
I am watching a Florida Panther team that could win, I believe, at any time in any era. Now, could they have gone toe-to-toe with Trottier and Bossy's Islanders and Podvan's Islanders? I don't know. I mean, I'd have to go into a deeper dive, but
I don't think you could ever figure it out.
I love this Florida Panther team because they can beat you so many ways.
Yeah. I remember I've said it on this show too, Brian Burke's thing about, you know, if you play four rounds, you're going to have to play four different ways, mm-hmm. whether it's heavy or fast or skilled or whatever it may be. And they seem to be able to do it any different way. I think, you know, again, I'm not saying that they're unbeatable. But what I am saying is when they're on, when they play their game, it's incredible to watch. Like, this is the they have now beat every team they've played in the playoffs by four goals in a single game in a series. Like, there's been a game where the other team just can't handle them. They've scored six-plus goals six times in the playoffs, five-plus eight of the last 11 games. Five goals, eight of the last 11 games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And their whole thing, GMs are going to watch them and go, we got to be tougher. It's like, no, man.
No.
They're not
no.
just
can,
tough.
Can I tell you something? That when I think of this Florida Panther team, I don't think about them being tougher than their opponent. I don't think about anything. The number one thing, and I've said this to you before, is they pass the puck better than any team I've seen in the last 20 years. They move the puck. It's not that Sam Bennett's bumping goalies or they trash talk or they find a way to hurt you or they're just tougher. No, they pass the puck better than any team. And I include that Oilers. I include mm-hmm. Carolina. I include the Maple Leafs. Nobody, when they're hitting their high note, mm-hmm. they move it like the Red Army Russians, man. I'm telling you, they can move it east to west. And they can make direct passes. They can rim it around. They could string five passes together before you can blink.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is fun to watch.
That Ekblad goal last night where they pass it into the bumper, slip it to him back door.
Globetrotters.
It was a cherry on top for that game. You know, the fact that they're doing all this on top of being good defensively and being this physical, whatever, I am working on an article right now that'll probably come out tomorrow on what we're talking about here, that when this team is on, like what are GMs going to look at this team and take away from it? And I think a lot of lesser GMs are going to go, whoa, they're physical, they're mean, whatever. I think that's what some teams are going to do. But their best players are 200 feet players. Barkov, Reinhardt, these guys, you know, Marchand, go through the list. They play the whole ice. They're physical. They use each other. It really is. I'm not saying the series is over. I'm saying when that team is on, it is something to behold.
No, what you're saying is when they're on, they are unbeatable.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Last night made me feel a lot better about Game 7 with the Leafs.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh, they can do that to the Oilers too, eh? That's enjoyable. Yeah. I enjoyed that. That makes, as a selfish Leaf fan, it made me feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
Just to add to your point is that what teams really need to understand when they watch Florida is that, and just to add to your point, that they could start with Barkov and they can work their way down to the fourth line. And the gap between 1 and 4 mm-hmm. is as narrow as anything you'll find. Whereas when you go to...
I'd argue 1 and 3.
Okay.
Like Gadjevich, Greer, Noshik.
No. Okay, they're not as talented, but that fourth line, they come at you.
Yeah.
Like it's relentless.
Right.
From 1 to 4, the forecheck, the time and space that they take away from you is relentless. It keeps coming. And, you know, we cover the Leafs closer to as close as anybody out there.
Yeah.
And that's not the Leafs. The drop off between 1, 2, 3, and 4
yeah.
is significant.
Last you dropped Kelly Yarncroc onto that Florida team. It's like
last night.
Yeah.
Okay. You go through Oilers 1 to 4 and the drop off was significant by the time you got to Kapanen and Brown, and those guys can come back and play well again.
Yep.
But the gap between the lines last night for Edmonton and the drop off of energy and pushback and all of it, night and day compared to Florida.
We got to get a Valley, but I will say, I have to step in and be the one to say this. Being, what, $20 million over the cap helps your depth.
And taxes.
The Leafs were, what were
go
they?
Taxes they, too, no, Sammy. They were, you're on a roll.
They were barely over the cap, so like, yeah, their worst guys are worse because they're not making as much.
You know what? That's not a bad point, Sam.
It's a fair point.
It's, and one worth noting.
But Gary would scream at me if I dare bring that up.
I think they're going to change it. It sounds like the next CBA, good, there will be some sort of playoff cap.
Anyways.
Let's go to Steve Aliquette, who can tell us all the numbers on state taxes and overage. And what else? What other issues you have, Sammy?
Well, none. You know what? May I jump in here, guys?
Yeah.
They've changed the culture there, and that's why it's attractive. Can I tell you a quick story? It's funny, Sammy, but this wasn't always the case, right? Steve Montador, my best friend growing up, he was about to sign with the Florida Panthers. This is when things were always going sideways in Florida, probably around, I guess, 08, 09-ish. And he turned down a really nice deal. It was something like $3 million times 3 years. And he was going to go to free agency. He went mountain biking in British Columbia, went into a tree, fractured his arm, and then called his agent, hey, we'll take that contract. So, like, I remember Monty saying to me, like, dude, I hated it there. Not that I didn't like Florida, but it didn't feel like hockey. They didn't have a culture at that time. They didn't have anything that was going to get you excited about having an opportunity to win like they do now. So, Sammy, the other side of the conversation is they've created a very desirable place to play hockey and at the highest level.
I fully understand that, but they are $20 million over the cap. So, that helps.
Valley, two things can be true.
The number one question going into the series next game is who the Edmonton Oilers should start net. But before we go there, just give us your evaluation so far of Bobrovsky versus Skinner, because we know that last year, Game 7, it was just Bobrovsky being that one save better. I could still see the game-winning goal that Reinhart scored last year that I didn't like. But are the Oilers getting out-goalied again in this series?
Yeah.
And you know what it did is? Did they gamble of going back to Skinner again?
Yeah, we'll get there.
Okay.
Let's get there together.
Okay.
Let's get there together. So the first thing I wanted to look at was when goalies are called upon to make a big save in a Stanley Cup final over the last 5 years, are they able to do it? And does it matter when you're looking at the winning goalie versus the losing goalie in that series? Okay, I'm not going to go all the way back, but I'm telling you it's there, and it's pretty fascinating. It's typically about one goal every five high-danger chances. So you can imagine a two-on-one, a breakaway, those screen deflections that are difficult. The Stanley Cup-winning goalies are stopping them at a high rate. I'll run you through a couple because I thought this was interesting. Bobrovsky, the year they lost, 3 years ago to Vegas, he was giving up one goal every 2.3 high danger chances in the final in the same series that Adin Hill was only allowing one goal every five. So that was the real separator in that series. Adin Hill made the bigger of the saves. Now you go back to last year, Edmonton outscored Florida in the final series 23-18 over the seven games. Now last season, Skinner had 41 high danger chances in that series. He only allowed 9 goals. So I think this is why Florida, seemingly better team than Edmonton going into the season. If Edmonton's saying to themselves, we can strengthen ourselves in other places, we'll be okay in net if we can just hedge that Skinner will do what he did last year, which is a solid series. 9 high danger goals against on 41 is 1 every 4.5, which means you could say, again, evaluating Skinner, is he good enough? That's the only thing we need to have happen. He has to operate around 3.5 to 4.5. He did it already. Let's lean on him for this year. And I think that's why they gambled on it. Go to this year, though. Skinner has faced 25 high danger chances over the 3 games. He's allowed 13 goals on those 25. That's a 480 save percentage. It's one goal every 1.9. So if Stanley Cup winning goaltending is between 4 and 5 and you're only getting, well, you're getting one goal every 1.9, you're in trouble. Bobrovsky, comparatively, one goal every 5 so far in the Stanley Cup final. So yes, are they getting goalied? They are, because Bobrovsky is overplaying where he should be and Skinner is significantly underplaying where he should be. All the while, Edmonton has more high danger chances over 3 games than Florida does. Just looking at goalies, like apples to apples with the goalies.
Do you believe that game by game, or I guess series long momentum exists, or is it kind of like fresh start for Skinner next game? We've seen him in these games be good in other situations. You never know what you're going to get.
Are your numbers jeopardizing a start for him next game?
They are, because of the way it looks. You know, like go from the goals last night from 5 all the way up to 1. Mm. And goal number 5, like Nurse is full of holes on that one. It's the PK goal. But you look at the east to west, and Florida has a book on him right now. They know that when the puck is low, he's going to be in a reverse. And to me, Skinner, if it was me, I wouldn't be down in a reverse there because he doesn't move well enough out of it. The puck goes east to west. And it's 23 east to west chances faced in the playoffs, 9 goals against. Now that's a big number. The breakaway goal is goal number 4. And when Bennett scores that one, I'm looking to myself and I'm like, geez, that looks like he could have done anything and scored. You know, like he looked relatively easy to beat. I looked up his numbers on breakaways and so far in the postseason. Skinner's faced 14 breakaways. He's allowed 8 goals, guys. 1 every 1.7. Yeah. That's not a number you can win with. You need momentum changing saves, and you're not getting breakaway saves. It's going to hurt you. So east to west, breakaways. Goal number 2 I didn't like because of positioning. That's the Verhaeghe goal. You know, and you look at positioning, and I think I mentioned this last week, he's got to back up in his crease a little bit. He's out too far for his lack of mobility. So when the puck ends up on Verhaeghe's stick, Verhaeghe looks up and he sees a goalie that's not there, that should be there. And the angle's off, his depth is off, and his squareness is off. And guys, you just can't make a save that way. You're sideways in your net and short side high is exposed. So what I think he needs is a reset. We've seen him reset well. A reset would mean miss a game. If it doesn't work out, you're still going back to Edmonton. You can steal one there, steal one back in Florida, and you might be in a position to, you know, get to a game seven again. But I think that right now, he's lost his way a little bit. The pressure is so overwhelming. It's so overwhelming. And I think that right now, if you go to Pickard, you know, he can play that way as far as ante up and you can rally behind him. But I think that's their only opportunity. Give Skinner a rest here to take a deep breath.
What'd you think of when they pulled him?
Yeah, I know the guys on the panel were talking about it in between periods, and I think it was Kelly Rudy that said, I'd leave him in there to battle. Mm-hmm. But are you still in it?
I'm DeBoer. I'd like two or three, right? In that game, I'd have been
like,
okay.
Would you have pulled him after 40 minutes? Would you have pulled him and not get to that next goal?
Yeah, yes. Full body of work, yes. He hasn't had a great series. It's almost like Skinner is one of those guys. Like, when you see this here, guys.
He's on his belly at the hash
right
marks.
Right now, the first goal of the game. There's the Verhaeghe
one. That's a nasty shot, game, though, Belly.
I know, but he was way off, Borny. Like, he didn't have angle. He didn't have squareness. He was deep. You're not going to get a save there. But again, the first goal, it's there's a lot there, and it's a broken play, but he's all over the place, and it's the panic button is being hit. When a goalie has a game that they're not happy with, it's mostly because they abandoned their game, their style. They didn't play with their stuff. And as soon as he chases outside the post like that, that's not the way he wants to play. He knows it. And that would really infuriate him because, you know, look, I didn't even play my game. Guys, there's so much pressure. I'm going to tell you a quick story. All right, so it's 2009. We are up 3-1 against Washington, and we are handing them the series because we were about to anyway, because Torts throws the water bottle into the stands and gets suspended for a game. Now, that hurt everybody, and I remember saying to my wife, you know what, we're up 3-1 right now, but it doesn't feel like it because that's just how well Hank is playing at this point. So now Torts is not our coach behind the bench because of the incident. And I go into game five, halfway through the game, I finish it. I go through at halfway point of game six and I finish it. And now we're playing game seven in Washington. And you'll get a kick out of this, Kipper, because it's Rammer, our trainer.
Yep. Jim Ramsey.
Jim Ramsey comes up to me before probably 30 seconds before warmups. I'm just about to put my helmet on. And he goes, Valley, come over here. And he opens up the training room a crack and he goes, Hank's not good. You're playing. And I was like, whoa, Rammer. You know, like, are you serious? Like, I might have just crapped my pants. And he goes, I'm going to go tell Torts. And I'm like, whoa. Before you tell Torts, at least see if you can find Benny, our goalie coach. And he finds Benny, brings him in, talks. Like, Hank was just going through it. I mean, he was like Denny Lemieux because he, you know, we shouldn't have been at 3-1. And then he was getting torched in 5 and 6. And now all of a sudden I'm going in. And finally, Rammer comes back and he says, Valley, Hank's going to try it in warm up. And we go into warm up. And I'm telling you, he doesn't even touch a puck. Like, it just wasn't going well. And I know Hank better than anybody at this point. I'm like, I'm probably playing tonight.
Yeah.
Rammer says again, Valley, be ready. I don't know if you noticed, but he wasn't looking too good in warm-ups. I was like, yeah, no, you know.
Yeah, I noticed.
Of course I saw that, remember? Thanks, Tips. So anyways, we go into the second period. We're losing 1-0 in the second period on a flutter. We end up tying it 1-1. There's a wrist shot at the end of the third period that goes over Hank's shoulder. We end up losing this game 2-1. It was actually Fedorov from distance. And I never forget it, but I get on the plate afterwards and go over and Chris Drury come over. They're like, Valley, what'd you think about that goal? Don't you think Hank should have had it? And I'm like, look at these guys. I'm like, do you have any idea what I've been through?
Yeah. The emotional roller coaster is heavy.
No, but it's like, you know, you get so banged up mentally, physically. Hank was just, he was carried our team for probably 30 games to get there in the first place, overwhelmed in the first round series. And you don't know, I'm just saying, I'm like, if you've seen the best guys go through it the way I have in a lot of cases, I've seen Roberto and Rick DiPietro, and, you know, I've talked to you about Jason LaBarbera. Like, I've seen these guys manage it, and it can be just so heavy. I just think that at this stage, you know what you do with Skinner? You bring him in, and if you're the coach, you bring him in, you say, Stu, how you feeling? You know, do you think you're all right for the next game? And if he hesitates for a split second, you know he's not okay. You need to look at him in the eye that way. And I've told you guys stories of being in the coaching room where we bring a guy in and say, hey, you're playing again tomorrow. And they say, well, you said I only had to play Friday night.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, guess what? You're not playing now.
Yeah, change their mind. Like,
wow.
So you need to know. And mentally, I'm just trying to explain to you how hard it can be and what it can do to the best.
You're watching and listening to Steve Aliquette, analyst for MSG, CEO of Clearsight Analytics. So you can speak of this playing the position, but all of this talk about Bennett and Florida bumping the goalie, did it get to the point where it maybe, I don't know, just absorbed them a little bit too much? Could that be part of it? Like, I'm watching, and it's just not Skinner. Bob's gotten into it too, where it's like, you're now.
Bob's always been like that.
It's looking like a soccer game with some of these guys trying to draw penalties, and I think it's brutal. But could this have just overplayed its hand in Skinner a little bit? The constant talk about bumping of a goalie.
I don't. You know what, Kipper? It doesn't bother anybody when they're in the game. It really doesn't. Geez, I probably shouldn't tell this story, but I will.
We like it when you do.
In the OHL, I was playing against this kid named Chris George, who's like 6'6", just nasty, 250 minutes, playing for Barrie at the time. And I came under him and hit him in the undercarriage, and like he went down, and I heard from his teammates after the game, he wants to kill me. Like, he physically wants to kill me because he was puking after the game because I hit him in the nuts so hard. And I never did that again. Like, I didn't do it again. Now, I sort of did it because I knew I wasn't going to play against him again.
Very safe on the bench.
Yes, smart man.
You know, but like, I remember seeing him at, what's that bar in London? Jack's. I see him in the summertime at Jack's, and man, I think he's coming for me. Oh. And I'm like, I'm just getting ready to fight. I'm like, oh, great. Now I got to fight George. I'm going to get the snot beat out of me. And he comes up to me. He's ready to say something. And I just hand him my beer. I'm like, I'm sorry, man. You know, like, no hard feelings. But I'm telling you, I did not do that ever again. I apologize to him. Chris, if you're listening, man, I really apologize for that. And, you just in the back of your mind as a goalie, you don't go there because it can go past the line where it interferes with your focus. And look, Bob, when I watch Bob play right now, I'm very impressed with how quickly he sets his feet and how active he gets out of his crease. Like, we're talking about the reverse there from Stu coming out slow. I would advise Stu, don't use that move, buddy. Honestly, just stay on your feet the whole time. Mm-hmm. And whereas with Bob, I'm watching him force out, set his feet in the white paint and be solid. And he's forcing a lot of shots wide because of it. And he's so big. Like, you see that save right there? I know that not everybody can see it, but it's a save that Bob misses with his glove. But because he's out so far, it hits him in the shoulder. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've seen a lot of. He doesn't have to be perfect, guys. You know, he doesn't have to be perfect because he's so active in his crease and he's such a strong skater that if you were looking at the full scope of skaters and you were going to rank them in the NHL, you know, Bob's right there with Dustin Wolf, whereas Stu Skinner's, you know, he's really at the lower end of the low end. And I think that he needs to back up to be successful. And that's why he needs a reset.
Are you a Pickard guy at all? Do you have a thought? I know he doesn't play a ton of hockey. Do you have an opinion on him one way or the other as a goaltender?
Sorry, Bornia, cut out my ear thing. Can you say it one more time?
Just Pickard. Are you a Pickard guy? Do you have a thought on him one way or the other?
Pickard is a battler. I mean, it's, you know what, Bornia? He's Billy Smith is what he is. He is Billy Smith modern day. He's going to go in there and grind. It's not going to be pretty. Sometimes when the goals go in, they don't look pretty. But if you need somebody to go in there and give you that moral boost, like just a breath of fresh air, just go in there and grind. And I think everybody would rally around it. You know, you saw it in the LA series.
So did that window, that stretch help potentially make a call for the next game?
Yeah, you've got 2 days to figure it here. And I think, again, if you get the sense from Stu, and you know him better than anybody, if you're his coach and coaching staff, if you get the sense that he needs just to let this thing breathe until we get back to Edmonton, all day long you're confident with a guy that's gone 6-0 for you in Pickard. And you wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for Pickard. So if he's ready and he's healthy, which it appears he is, let him go in there and just grind. And again, I'd go with him because of just the overall sense of team chemistry and belief a little bit that way.
Are you good to go away from the series at all?
Yep.
Is that all right? Unrestricted free agency is a few weeks away. Last year we talked about you thought Stolarz was one of the guys that was a good buy low. You know, a guy that had upside and could do it. You also pinpointed Kevin Lankinen before Kevin Lankinen had a good season. Is there anyone on your mind out there?
Yeah, you're good, apparently.
Who's next? Who's the next guy to pop? You got any UFA goalies out there?
You know what?
Or just guys who are under contract.
No, but it's funny. No, I looked at it. I looked at it today, and this is the thinnest year we've seen in a really long time. So I would say that the best performing goalie that you might need in something like a 1A is actually Jake Allen. Mm-hmm. Jake Allen would be the guy that you'd bring in to support. Look, hey, if you had Jake Allen in Edmonton's net right now, Borney, they'd be in a better position.
Yeah.
All right? You know, that's the type of situation you put Jake Allen in. It's true, though. Yeah. It's true. You know, from January 1st, Jake was the fourth best performing goalie in overall expected saves. So, like, you're not getting somebody that's hurting. And I think he's still 34 years old. He's not over the hump.
Yeah.
And I think he'd come in at a price point that a team like Edmonton, like, don't forget, Edmonton's not supposed to have Stu Skinner as their number one right now. It's supposed to be Jack Campbell. He should be in, what, year three, I think, of his contract. It's almost unfair to pile on Stu Skinner.
Yeah.
You know? And if you're looking at other goalies around the league that can come in and fill a void where you're not going to spend top dollar, Alex Lyne would be another option, or Chris Drieger. Jonas Johansson, I like a lot in Tampa Bay, but there is not a blue chip find that you can really pull in like we've seen in the last couple of years.
What about Dan Vladar?
No.
No. What about Anton Forsberg? My last one.
No. Okay. Forsberg I've liked over the years. I have. But I don't think he's there. You know who I think is Drieger. Sneaky, Borney? You know who I think is sneaky? Jet Greaves is to me, he's right there with Dustin Wolf. Like, I think this kid's unreal. I think he's great. I think Jet Greaves, if he's as good as I think he is, and Columbus thinks possibly he is, maybe it's Elvis Merzlikins that somebody's willing to be able to capture from Columbus. Mm-hmm. And I say that with a little bit of reservation. You need a very good goalie coach that can teach him how to manage depth and odd man rushes and rush play altogether. Because the only guy that's worse off the rush than Stu Skinner over the last 3 years is Merzlikins, but he's very strong in all of the other areas. So when you can look at a goalie, maybe you're a team that doesn't give up an awful lot off the rush, that helps. But then you can just help him piece together his rush game and his reads. I don't think rush is that difficult to learn. You just have to understand, if you're Elvis Merzlikins, that you don't have to over-challenge the shot the way that he does, and that's why he's so susceptible to the East-West stuff.
Have we talked to Valley since DeBoer has been fired in Dallas?
No.
So was this just a foregone conclusion that Ottinger and Peter DeBoer could no longer be in harmony moving forward here for you?
Yeah, I got a couple calls after that one. Thanks for the exposure on that one, boys. Well, I had my opinions on it, and, you know, I think that's why you guys bring me on here. I just knew it was going to happen. Like, I knew as soon as Pete said that, I said in my head, I was like, fired. You know, like, just, you know, that's just the way, I just think that's just the way the cookie crumbles, you know. And he went overboard on it. Maybe he wishes to, you know, relinquish a few of the comments. Mm-hmm. But I never saw that working. You know what I thought would have happened, Kipper? If they don't make a change there, whether they keep DeBoer and, you know, seemingly move on from Ottinger, if DeBoer started that season, he wouldn't have made it to Christmas. It just never works. You know, it was like Jacob Trouba starting the season for the Rangers this year when he was almost should have been traded over the summer. Like, so it just never works.
So just to follow up, my colleague here, JB, wrote a raving article on sportsnet.ca that people should go revisit. And it just basically talks about how soft the players are today and that they can't take anything remotely, even as critical as, you know, it came across from DeBoer. And I know the coaches union loved his article. I'm not sure about the rest of the players in the league, but there is something to be said about JB's article here, Valley.
I don't disagree with what I'm sure it's a great article, and I'm sure I would agree with all of it, except I don't believe these athletes nowadays have the thick skin that you two guys had or that I had.
That's
you know
it.
What coaches used to say to me, you wouldn't believe it.
Well, hey, I certainly would.
Yeah, we would believe it.
Same era, pal. It's not that it was fun, but, you know, it didn't have to be a relationship ruiner either. It felt like, you know, hey, shouldn't have said that. Let's talk about it. Let's figure it out.
Hey, JB, I'm on the ice with these kids, like college kids, USHL kids, OHL kids, every day right now. You wouldn't believe what I can't say to them, what I used to say to them 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, it's just different, man. They even talk back to me. I made this kid go down and back today because I said, hey, man, you missed the low blocker the last three shots. He goes, no, I didn't. I was like, what? Like, if you're going to talk back, at least be good. Down and back.
Yeah, hey. Down and back. There it is.
Followed up with a why. Why do I need to go down and back?
Tell me more. Yeah. I don't agree with that.
What is, like, you hear the buzzwords from the coaches, holding the standard, hunting the standard, and culture.
Ugh,
you know what
business
really,
jargon.
You know what it really, it's so annoying, right? But, you know, what it is really is, if I tell a goalie before the exercise begins that I need you to be like a lion in the Serengeti attacking that puck and getting it like you haven't eaten in 2 weeks, and then he lets a soft rebound out and lets it go in on a rebound or doesn't chase and try and freeze it, at the end of the exercise, I just say down and back. Like, that's holding them accountable. They want to learn how to compete. They just don't know how. And I think in a lot of cases, NHL players still have to be held accountable. And I wasn't kidding what I said last week. If you pay the coaches too much, they're not going to stick their neck out as much. It's just the way it is. I remember talking to a GM about this a little while ago, and I said, why don't you pay the scouts more? You know what he said? If you pay them too much, they won't stick their neck out to make a call on a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Something to think about, right? If you pay them too much, are they going to stick their neck out and not make a call on a guy? Or if you pay them the right amount, that sweet spot of money, then they want to move up the ladder, so they will stick their neck out.
Right.
And that's where I wonder if the coaches aren't falling in that same trap.
Why do you think our show's so good? It's because we're vastly underpaid.
Well, you got me in the wheelhouse.
We got nothing to lose.
Hey, you know what I really liked from your show yesterday, talking to Chris Pronger, when he was talking about being 2 feet away from the net.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nice one. As soon as he said it, I wrote it down, Borny, and then when it came back on, you said the same thing.
Yeah.
So I looked it up because I really, you know, I'm trying to get teams and players to understand how valuable broken plays are. Well, what Pronger's saying is I want to be away from the net so I'm not a broken play going off my skate into my own net. So the broken play goal that went in more than any other goal this year was the attempt east to west across the front of the net,
yeah,
tight to the net. And it scored 115 goals this year on 333 chances. And the next closest broken play was 95 goals on a layered screen off point shots. So the more valuable broken play is the east to west at the top of the crease than it even is from the point, if you can believe that.
Excellent stuff, buddy. Excellent stuff as always. So appreciate you on a Tuesday, pal. Thanks for doing this.
All right, boys. I might not see you again. Have a great summer.
Oh no. Hey.
What?
Yeah. We got a year-end show here.
We'll talk.
Thanks, Valley.
Buddy, you disappear on us. It's over.
Let's put a pin in that one.
Hey, can we edit that out on the podcast? Valley's telling us he's done for the year.
I think that's fair. I mean, it is June.
Great stuff.
we have wrung a lot of juice out of that man.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible. Anyway.
Game time there, Sammy boy.
Sure. It's game time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. And in another edition of Deep Regrets that Sam McKee didn't bet, the Conn Smythe futures.
Mm-hmm.
The favorite for the Conn Smythe that I brought up on this very show mere days ago.
Is it Bam Sendit?
It is absolutely Sam Bennett, the favorite for the Conn Smythe trophy at plus 125. Yeah. And when I talked about it, it was plus 1400.
I don't think he needs to score another goal. They just need to win two games.
Yeah.
Can I ask you guys how sure you were that he was scoring as soon as he broke in on that breakaway? I was like, I honestly just turned off the TV.
There's no part of the deke where you felt like Skinner had a hope.
No.
Okay.
But hold on.
Is he? Okay, go ahead.
Here's my thing with the whole Sam Bennett's going to win the Conn Smythe thing. No. I think I'm about to make a very reasonable point.
Okay.
If you asked Florida who was more important before every game, I could remove Barkov or Bennett from your lineup. I think they would all say Barkov's our most important guy. If Barkov's not in, I don't think Bennett has the chance to be who he is. And I know it's just about how matchups fall. Bennett plays like 16 and a half minutes.
I know.
Barkov's out there 21-30 against top guys. But he's more important.
But he's more important. Yes, no one will argue that. But Bennett's had more important impact plays, if that makes any sense. And that's what it is. That's what the Conn Smythe is. It's like
Barkov's the wind beneath his wings.
Who stands out when the game's on the line or there's a difference maker in a goal or a play? And Bennett's had a number of those.
For sure.
And he's not the most important player and he's not their best player, but he's had that window where he's been the most impactful.
And he defines their culture more than Barkov does. Like when you think of the Panthers, you think about the guy.
But the hit before the breakaway.
Yeah, he plows Pod Coles and then he goes and
come on
leads the rush on a breakaway.
That was close to a bad scene.
Yeah, it was.
It's a memorable goal.
Yeah, for sure. Listen, no argument. He has been the Florida Panther. You're like, I remember him from that playoff push and or that cup push.
I think he's underrated with his hockey IQ and his skill.
Kipper, there is zero part of Sam Bennett that is underrated right now.
Yeah. The rating of Sam Bennett is...
Well, no.
It was bordering on extremely overrated.
It wasn't that long ago. Someone on this panel, not me or you, said, I'm not paying that for 60 points this season. And he
51's his career high. Let's be
51,
clear.
51, okay.
Yeah.
Worse.
Buddy, 8 years, you're going to get 40-point seasons, and he's going to be 35. And, you got to be careful with this deal.
I know.
You want to pay for the future, not the past.
These type of deals that we're looking at moving forward, they never really age well for anybody.
Fortunately, the cap's going to go way up over his deal, so...
And last thing before we go, another big week in the PGA Tour, U.S. Open this weekend at Oakmont, where I've seen enough videos of rough and fast greens, and they're shaving the fringes, and they're trying to make it look like it's the hardest thing on earth. But Scottie Scheffler is the big favorite at plus 280. Bryson DeChambeau, the next favorite, plus 750. Rory all the way down at 13-1. John Rahm, 12-1. And Xander Schauffele at 24-1 to round out the top five for the favorites. So there you go.
You should be able to see some white on a ball.
They cut I heard that they did cut some of the rough.
Well, they cut it, but I saw it didn't look like anything was coming off.
It's too hard. It's just stupid.
I'm among the crowd that likes to see these guys tortured a little bit. So,
anyways, that was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
Okay, we'll go take a quick break. When we return, we'll get into a little bit more of what we saw last night and what we didn't like to see out of the Edmonton Oilers. Where was the toughness when you needed it? That and more when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
As a reminder, this hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. last night disappointed me for no other reason that I thought that the Oilers could fight fire with fire last night, but I only saw fire from one side.
Well, didn't you think the Oilers were trying to stick up for themselves, to fight fire with fire? You know, like they didn't go quietly into the night. It was, stuff happened. Yeah,
no, I got a little quietly into the night.
Yeah?
Yeah, I got it. I got quietly into the night.
You had Frederick chasing around Bennett.
That's okay. It's okay. That's one good component.
There's a brawl.
Okay.
I don't think they went quiet. I mean, they lost 6-1 in the Stanley Cup final. So,
but who's just beating up on Ekholm along the boards? Greer?
Greer.
Yeah.
I hated that. That bothered me. It was a bad look.
Like Ekholm ends up in Wallman's arms.
Yes. And that's, I'm telling you, I've been in that position before, and there's a few guys that I felt like could not end the game on the bench. They had to have been escorted off the ice. That's the kind of finish without jeopardizing suspensions or fines are fine. We saw Wallman fine $10,000. No problem. Pay that all day long. But I hated watching Greer go after Ekholm and then really nothing at the end. And Evander Kane, to me, was the first guy I thought could not finish the game. Like Evander Kane needed to go after somebody and lay a beating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know what? Getting a 2-minute high sticking penalty and then a 10-minute misconduct was the easy way out for him last night.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I get the point. You know, I think a lot of what people in Edmonton are talking about is like, they lost their composure. You know, a lot of this seemed to be Florida having fun with it. I understand the fights are not entirely fun here, so maybe this is not the clip for my point.
Well, give Nurse credit, too, because that's a tough guy he fought.
Absolutely.
Nurse is in the top
Nurse,
though.
He can fight the respect in the world.
But he can fight anybody. He's in the top class to me.
But there's a few guys that needed to kind of answer like a Nurse.
But I do feel that more than, and that's fair point by you. For my point, it's like they didn't handle it well emotionally. It felt like they weren't in control of things. They, you know, they were just kind of taking it as it happened. Florida, even though Florida was involved in all that stuff, they seemed very composed and, you know, they're very comfortable in that style of game. And they just got Edmonton off their game. So what worries me for the Oilers now is the message is we need to be more composed. We can't take that many penalties. We need to play within ourselves, take a cross check, take a whatever. And now Florida's going to have less sticks on them, more access to the net. Like, Edmonton's going to try to not take as many penalties. What, they take 11 last night?
11.
You know, they're going to not take, and if you're Florida,
the most since the
mid-80s. Create room for ourselves out there.
Most combined penalty minutes in a Stanley Cup final game, the most was the Flames and Canadiens in 86. Panthers, Golden Knights, 23 with 148. Canucks Bruins with 145 in 2011, and last night was the fourth most in the history of the Stanley Cup final with 140 combined penalty minutes. So, bit of a hoot nanny out
and
there.
It was the most PIMs in any playoff game this year, and the most, third most all season long. So that game was out of order.
Yeah. I just, that, we talk about what makes the Florida Panthers great, and like toughness is one thing, but like, I don't, like we've said, they have tough guys in their fourth line, but like they're not all particularly like bruisers, but like they just have guys that make you want to do dumb crap all the time. Like you look at Tkachuk in the eye and he's got that stupid mouth guard outside of his face and he's always in your goalie's face and he's just like doing stuff to piss you off.
Yeah.
They're elite at making you mad and making you do dumb stuff. And then you see them go in the power play and they go globetrotters on you.
Yeah.
Like it's just, they're so good at every facet.
And so frustrating because then you get Marchand.
And look at this flop by Bobrovsky. Oh my God. What? That's embarrassing.
That's embarrassing.
Neymar
would be proud of that one. Yeah. That's embarrassing. But anyways, I just.
Yeah. So the Oilers end up shorthanded a lot. So yeah, next game, really tough to me to go into a game against the Panthers thinking, be careful.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the last emotion you should have.
Another two games between games Thursday night.
Oh, it is.
It resumes. Who do you like that better for?
Florida.
Yeah. It depends, though. You know, McDavid and Draisaitl.
Two days at home.
the path to winning for Edmonton is McDavid and Draisaitl are, you know, undeniable, and Skinner's better, right? So do those guys need the most rest? Do you need them at their very best to get what you need?
I'm not sure it's enough. I think they need two or three guys to once again step up. I don't know if it's another Perry miracle, Arvidsson, Brown, Nugent Hopkins hurting. He didn't have an impact last night, right? But it was a game time decision. We don't even know if he's playing at 50% or 60%.
Didn't practice today.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
and the fact that the Oilers did practice today is kind of crazy in itself.
Can you really see the Edmonton Oilers winning three of four games now?
Yeah.
The only reason I can.
With Draisaitl, McDavid, Skinner at the top of their game, because I don't think it's enough. I think there needs
Hyman is so bad.
They need depth guys to step out again and get a job done.
When you don't have a ton of depth guys, losing a physical, fast, scory depth guy in Hyman really hurts. You know, last year the Oilers beat the Panthers three times in the Stanley Cup Final in a row. You know, it's not impossible. The one thing I'll note,
just have to win Thursday.
Yeah, you have to win.
Have to win Thursday, and then you're going home with a chance to go back up. Like Thursday night is off. It's a big game, but like for the history of like the league in terms of Connor McDavid and the trajectory of his career, Thursday night is as big as it gets hockey game in the NHL.
If you believe that the Panthers are like a more defense first type of team and more by whatever power plays at the start of a period when there's fresh ice, they do worse. I know people don't know that, but because the penalty kill is rested and they have a chance to set and make a plan. They're energized and they're ready to kill. So you get hard workers can outdo your skill guys. My point is that helps Florida if you're the hardworking defense team.
So the Harlem Globetrotter goal, right?
Oh my
the Ekblad
God.
Goal, he started the power play with, I think, Marchand's line. And then on the back half, after the penalty killers are exhausted, then he throws out Barkov and Reinhardt.
Yeah.
And it was like, you knew that goal was coming.
Yeah. Well, they have flipped who their PP1 is, right? Florida, it was starting power plays with the Marchand unit because they've been so good.
So good.
Which, by the way, is such a funny, like, Leafs thing because we watch them all year long about, like, can you break it up into two units?
No, not allowed.
It's illegal. You go to jail if you do it.
Yeah.
But Florida has proven that it's okay to have two power play units.
I have two things. Wes McCauley, of course, wanted to make sure it was about him last night in the first period. He wants to make as many.
I honestly didn't even know it was old.
Enough penalties. Like these little ticky-tack. It's like, oh my God, it's the final. Let's see some 5-on-5 action. So first of all, that drove me crazy. Second of all, the Leafs paid more for Scott Laughton than the Panthers did for Brad Marchand. And that will keep me up at night for the rest of my life.
He wanted to go to Florida, right?
Yeah. It's only Florida. It was only Florida.
Don't care.
It just hurts. It does. Yeah. Sure.
Similar
contribution.
Very. Animal.
Not in anyone's wildest dreams did we think that Brad Marchand was going to come in and have that type of impact.
Of course you thought that could happen.
Not like that.
What?
Of course you thought that could happen.
One of the greatest playoff performers of our era joining the best playoff team of the era?
But he's
doing well together?
Listen, he's coming off like an off season. Yeah. He came off multiple injuries. He didn't even, he had no training camp. Like, come on. His numbers are off the charts.
Brad Marsh.
I know.
He's unbelievable.
I know.
It looked really weird for the first couple of weeks, and I don't think he was into it as much. And it was just, and then he settled into that third line with those fins, and they're just, God, it makes me sick.
He's going to make $8 million next year.
Good for him.
$7.5 million.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah, he should.
He deserves it.
He should. And the Leafs should give it to him.
Sure. Done. And Sam Bennett, 12.5.
Oh my God, Sammy.
Oh my God.
Spending like a drunken sailor.
Let's just go home. So, I don't want to think about the Panthers anymore.
Well, you have to because it's not over.
I don't wanna.
It's not over. Our thanks to Steve Aliquette, who always does an amazing job on the Real Kipper and Bourne show every Tuesday. You think he's still on the air?
Not anymore.
Like Doug McClain?
Ego.
It's over.
Our thanks to you, the listener, the watcher.